Welcome to the Black Sparrow Media Internet Broadcast Network.
You're listening to Linux in the Ham Shack. LHS is a podcast about Linux, open source and amateur radio for everyone. Now here are your hosts, Russ, K5TUX, Cheryl, W5MOO, and Bill, NE4RD.
Well, hello and welcome everybody. You have tuned in to episode number 249 of Linux in the Ham Shack. This is our Weekender edition, and this comes out on Thursday night, early Friday morning, and it is good to represent the next couple of weeks in Linux, open source, and hedonism. Those are the three things that we are all about here. And I am Russ, K5TUX.
I'm Cheryl, W5MOO.
And I'm Bill, NE4RD.
All right, very good. So we're going to just sort of jump into it on the most terrific amateur radio podcast on the internet. And we're going to talk about some amateur radio topics. Well, who would have thunk it?
Imagine.
Wow. Can you tell it's the weekend already?
It's already
there. All right. So Bill's going to tell us about a couple of contests that are coming up.
Yeah. So this weekend, we have the beginning of the CQ Worldwide DX contest series. This is the RIDI one. It runs from 00000000 Zulu on September 29th to 2400 Zulu September 30th. Get your Warble Warble and your cooling system ready for your finals. And this contest is going to be fun, if the propagation gods allow it to be. Because you know that those HF bands have been mighty, mighty poor lately. But we can only hope that a contest of this size that brings out so many people will give us the propagation we need to kind of tweak the bands a little bit and make it a fun weekend for everybody else.
We have mentioned before that the more people that tend to get on the radio at any particular time sort of open up the propagation. It's almost like the little EM waves and the things that, you know, fry us internally actually manufacture radio wave propagation.
It does, there is a phenomena that it happens in contests that all of a sudden stuff opens up, even in bands that shouldn't be open at that time, and it is amazing. And you know, a lot of people say it can be caused possibly by, you know, the artificial ionization that occurs from all the RF signals that are currently being, you know, pushed out there rather poorly with very high power and illegal power in some cases.
And I think it actually takes the Earth slightly more off axis every time too.
Yeah, it just kind of bumps us.
Yeah, I mean, just a little bit.
You thought it was global warming. It's actually all these hams getting on the weekend. They're just kind of like, just kind of bumping. That's where that polar axis, that true magnetic north keeps moving.
Right. Those leap seconds, those aren't caused by the slowing of the Earth's rotation. They're caused by lids.
Yeah, lids. So our other lid contest that's going on is the beginning of, and I say that because these are a three-parter. The ARRL EME, so that's the Earth, Moon, Earth contest, begins this weekend as well. Zero Zulu on September 29th to 2359 Zulu on September 30th. So just remember, you have a minute less in that contest than the CQ Worldwide. So this is for bouncing signals off the moon, and this is for 2.3 gigahertz and up. So this will be pretty specific stations if you happen to have that type of equipment. This will be your weekend to go try it out. If you don't, if you're doing 6 meters, 2 meters, or 440, or, you know, something below 2.3 gigahertz, look towards October and November, where those lower bands will be the highlight. And we've talked a lot about these minimal stations and stuff like that you can now do on EME with the enhanced software from WSJT. Doing the moon bounce on, you know, a single Yagi with some really minimal equipment. So, you know, this, if you're really interested in this, this will be the time of the most activity. on those, you know, possibly not this weekend because it's the higher the higher frequency stuff, but you know, start preparing your equipment to possibly get involved and try, you know, getting in there in October and November. You know, if you have like a, you know, one of those Alaskan versions of the aero antenna for your satellite, you know, the really long one with like a bunch of elements on it, that one would probably be sufficient for 2 meters to give it a try. Although I would probably do a boomer or something like that to, you know, get every inch of gain that you possibly can out of it. But, yeah, so this is a kind of an interesting weekend to see that the EME. So take a look at that from the ARRL.
All right, very cool. So we can let Cheryl talk about what's coming up in the next weekend for contesting.
All righty then. The first one is the Oceana DX contest. Phone 0800 Zulu October 6th to 0800 Zulu October 7th. It's open to entrants located within Oceana, i.e. VK, ZL, YB, and KH6, and most but not all Pacific Islands, those defined as Oceana, for the Worked All Continents Award. Can work or log anyone, anywhere for points, including other Oceana stations and DX. DX entrants outside Oceana work or log Oceana stations for points. Any non-Oceana contact should be logged as normal, but do not score. And you can get more information about this at OceanaDXContest.com.
Well, you heard it here. If you're not in Oceana, you don't score next weekend.
Yep. Sorry. Just doesn't work. So, and the next one for next weekend is the California QSO Party. It runs from 1600 Zulu October 6th to 2200 Zulu on October 7th. We don't tend to highlight state QSO parties, but the CQP tends to be a favorite. Enjoy this on all of the HF contest bands. And more information as well is available at cqp.org.
And I'm going to assume that means no work.
No work.
No work, right? No work bands.
Oh, no work
bands. No work bands.
Yes, so no work. No work
bands. Yes, all the contest HF bands. In other words, no work bands.
Right.
So. Yeah, I figure that would be better wording, I think, because that, like, most people realize that work bands are not for contesting. But again, that was a billism. I love the CQP, and I haven't done it in the last year or two, and I really want to go back to doing it. It's really a fun contest. It's a pretty active, and it's pretty hard to collect all the counties and stuff like that in California. So it does make for a fun trial of your equipment getting ready for like sweepstakes and stuff like that. Especially if you have like a beam, you can just point it one way, just point it towards California.
And good luck.
So it's fun. I always enjoy the CQP. I think it's a good season opener to kind of, if you haven't really got back into contesting, but you do in November sweeps, you know, do the CQP. It just kind of, it's kind of a good one to kind of open everything up on.
All right. Very good. That's if you like the whole QSO party type thing. So is this all modes?
I think it's just CW and it will also be voice.
Okay, CW voice, no digital.
I don't think there's any digital. I'll look real quick.
All right. Well, you can fill that in while Bill tells us about Enigma.
Yeah, CQ and phone. That's CW and phone.
So, okay, there you go.
Yeah, so this is a special event station. I only found one, but I had a lot of information on it, so I decided to only have it listed here. So this is the Enigma Reloaded special event. It runs from September 28th to October 6th. This Enigma event started in 2014, originated from an idea jointly developed by the Marine Museum of La Spezia, Italy, and the Cultural Association Rover Joe of Florenza, Italy. As an international event to link to an encryption exhibition organized in conjunction with another cultural event, the European Researchers Night. The main idea behind the Enigma event is to involve people all over the world, and specifically young people, in focusing their attention on the importance of scientific research in general, and specifically on cryptography, or algos, cryptography, as main driver of most of the cultural events at the end of the World War II.
Crucial.
I got a microphone in front of my eyes, so I'm missing some words.
Maybe you shouldn't put it like between you and the monitor. I'm just thinking.
Yeah, I know. This is why I'm sitting down. I'm like, it totally messes me up. Even considering their impact both on history and on the present world's life. So there's a bunch of stations all over the place, and I'll just read a couple of these, like the RSGB National Radio Center in Bletchley Park. GB3RS will be on there. We'll see one from the Deutsches Museum Club Station, Delta Lima Zero, Delta Mike. The Dayton Amateur Radio Station will, Amateur Radio Association will be on there, W8 Bravo India. The U.S. Naval Academy Radio Club, W3ADO, and CW Ops Club, K3CWO. And yeah, a bunch of other ones and a bunch in Italy, of course. And I was kind of surprised because we actually have an Enigma machine here at the Computer Museum in Bozeman, Montana. And I'm like, oh, man, someone should probably activate that one because it they have a really cool cool museum and they have a cool room there just with the Enigma in it. And it's a pretty interesting piece of equipment to look at up close. If you've never seen one, they're really cool to look at. And of course, if you don't know about them, you know, they're really cool, cool piece of equipment, that's all mechanical and it, definitely worth looking at. And this event just highlights, the interest in that as well.
Very cool. I've never seen an Enigma machine, and I know I've picked up bits and pieces of information about Bletchley Park and all of the folks there who worked on cracking the Enigma cipher and all of that. And then there's the movie The Imitation Game, which I haven't seen either. That sounds really interesting to me, and one of these days I hope to get around to learning about all of that stuff. So definitely a huge part of World War II, so code cracking and all that kind of that stuff. So, yeah, maybe you should activate the Enigma machine in Bozeman. You could probably sign on here and get that started up.
Yeah, I don't know if I have time, but I'll give somebody my call to do it. It's over in Bozeman. Maybe I'll contact some hams. We have some hams in the in our contesting club that are over there and mention this to them and see if they would be interested in kind of doing something in cooperation there with the Computer Museum. Which is way cool. If you ever come out to Montana, go to the Computer Museum. It seems lame, but it's awesome. It's really, really, really surprisingly awesome.
Well, St. Robert, Missouri has a vacuum museum.
That's true.
So I bet it's more cool than that.
I don't know.
There's also a big ball of twine somewhere in Kansas. That's true.
There's a giant ball of twine right there somewhere. So.
Well, yeah, if you're completely
bored. Exactly. In the chat room, I was seeing that, let's see, Dave KB0OWD said the bands are never closed. It takes someone to open them up, in reference to our discussion of RF emissions. And Ted WA0EIR said 10,000 receivers do not make a band opening.
Well, that's that true. Is true.
That's pretty funny. All right. So anyway,
receivers never make a band opening, but transmitters can.
That's right. Absolutely.
Because everybody could be listening. The band would never open up.
Well, it could be open. Just no one would ever know it.
That's right.
All right. So moving on from that, we have an announcement, and I'll just make this brief. We have our store at shop.lhspodcast.info. It has LHS branded merchandise. We have some apparel, some drinkware, some hardware, things like that. And you can go ahead and support the show if you want by downloading some of our cool branded merchandise. We've added a whole bunch of new stuff over there. And as I said before, a lot of it is drinkware, but that's kind of what we do here. So
you can't download merchandise. You have to buy merchandise.
Well, I don't. Did I say
download? Yeah, you just said you can go download some of our new merchandise.
Well, all right.
You can download it to your eyes.
There you go. Right. There you go.
You can absorb all the eye candy. You can download it into your brain, and then you can go buy a shot glass or
there
something.
There you go. Yeah.
Okay, so. Cool. All right. Very good. So anyway, shop.lhspodcast.info, and when I get around to it, that will also be lhspodcast.store will be the link.
So do we eventually?
Eventually.
I do have a question about the merchandise.
Okay, what about the merchandise?
So do we have some more etch stuff? I didn't even look in there. Do we have some more etch?
The only etch thing we have is the pint glass.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, because the shot glass. Because
I had
everything else. Well, yeah. Some pint glasses are UV printed. The USB sticks are UV printed, and everything else is vinyl.
Okay. So, well, I took home one of the glasses.
Yes.
With with a printed logo on it, and somehow it ended up in the dishwasher, and it no longer has
printed
the
logo. Yeah.
So I might be interested in more of those etched ones. Those are actually nice.
Okay.
I
like well, those. We'll send you an etched one. That's no
you got
problem.
One or two.
Oh, whatever's easier to put in the box.
All right. Well, we'll make sure you get some etched ones.
Cool.
Yeah,
you know, they're a little rough on the fingers, but they're really cool.
Well, you can always sand them down a little bit, I suppose.
Yeah. Cool.
And I'm kind of disappointed that I would have thought the UV printing would not come off in the dishwasher. So
maybe I just had an early one or something like I don't know.
They were all printed at the same time, so
it came right off.
Well, actually,
because I was like, wow, this glass looks just like the etched one, except for it has nothing on
okay,
it.
Okay, when we send you the etched ones, send me back that one. The one
he's going to take it
I'm
back gonna, and yell at him.
Go bitch at somebody because okay. Those should not come off.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean,
there is actually one of the UV ones in there on my desk.
Yeah.
Much. So you might want to run it through our dishwasher and see what
happens. Yes, we'll see what happens. Because if those are coming off in the dishwasher, then the printer is going to hear from me. So
Yeah, try that out.
Okay, I'll do that. All right. So moving on, we have our Linux in the Ham Shack ham radio challenge for this week. And I made a simple one because there's been a couple of stories. One in the last episode about the Swedish pay to play over 200 watts. And tonight's mention of an EME contest, so I said, hey, I can challenge our listeners to try moon bounce. There you go. Try bouncing some signals off the moon.
Oh, I thought you were talking about like a bounce house.
It's kind of like that for radio waves.
There's enough delay that you will hear your own signal on the moon. So you don't have to worry about scheduling something or anything else like that. You will hear your own dits come back from the moon. There's that much of a round trip delay.
Yep.
Alrighty then.
Because the moon is really far away.
That's right.
All right. So anyway, so give EME a try if you've never tried it before. That might be something interesting to do. It's one of the ham radio disciplines out there. All right. So moving on, we're going to talk about some open source stuff. And the first thing in the open source category is a distribution to try. And I found this one today. It's called Feren OS, FERENOS. Feren OS is based on Linux Mint, which is a very good Linux distribution. What makes it one of the most visually attractive Linux distros is its tweaked Cinnamon desktop environment. It promises to deliver an experience that will match or beat the aesthetics of macOS and Windows operating systems. Feren OS is a rolling release, and the look and feel is familiar to most users. There are Windows-like start button and taskbars. They have all the useful icons. Start menu is intuitively designed, and clicking on an option opens a submenu. The theme changer tool lets you play with icons, setup, background, etc. And Feren OS, apart from being a beautiful Linux distribution and fully loaded with eye candy, is familiar and innovative. Also, it has a familiar desktop scheme, clean, flat design, modern environment, and is beginner friendly. So there you go. It sounded interesting to me. Most of that was advertising speak, not me reading. You know, me talking was just me reading off the website. But if you want a Linux Mint-based distribution full of eye candy, a flat theme, and beginner-friendly, give Feren OS a try. I'm actually going to try it. It sounds interesting to me. I like the eye candy.
Yeah. And, you know, I was gonna mention one here,
too. Oh, well, mention one then. Certainly.
Only because I downloaded it today, and I saw it mentioned just the other day. And it's not Linux. It's BSD.
Oh, no.
BSD. Yes, it's Ghost BSD. Yeah, I know, me too. And this is a Ghost BSD, and it's basically free BSD with the UI and everything else that normally doesn't work for crap. A la True OS, that really is not True OS, at least in my experience. I think we've reviewed it here before. But the next one of these next time we do a Linux in the Ham Shack segment, so in a couple weeks, I'm going to review this and see if I can put any ham radio software on it and see how far I can get. The Mate looks quite beautiful, and that's what that's the installer that I have downloaded. So, look forward to that if you're interested in BSD and you think, since Linus left Linux, it's going to go to the hell in a handbasket. For everybody in the chat room right now, I'll throw a screenshot of my live desktop on it.
All right. Very cool. I'll check that out, too, once you post it. All right. So there's a couple of distributions to try. One Linux, one BSD. And of course, there are lots of different Linux and BSD distributions out there. You don't have to try the ones we suggest, but we try and pick ones that are interesting for one reason or another. But you can pick whatever flavor you like and go on your merry computing way. So Cheryl, we've got a couple of events coming up this week in the open source space. So you can probably tell us about those.
You'll think about it. Yes. So the first event is an open networking summit. It is in Amsterdam. It is September 25th through the 27th. It is the industry's premier open networking event, gathering enterprises, service providers, and cloud providers across the ecosystem to share learnings, highlight innovation, and discuss the future of open source networking, including SDN, NFV, orchestration, and the automation of cloud network and IoT services. And then Symphony Live London 2018, and it is, of course, in London, is the September 27th and 28th. It's a two-day event, including a one-day workshop and a one-day two-track conference. Over 350 engineers, developers, and IT professionals will meet at the Westminster for the conference. Symphony is proud to organize the 7th edition of the British Symphony and PHP Conference and to welcome the Symphony and PHP communities from all over the UK. Join us for 2 days of best practices, experience, knowledge, making new contacts, and hearing the latest developments in the framework.
All right, very good. A couple of cool events coming up over in Europe. And then I have down here an event for next week. It's not actually next week. It's the week after next. But there was really nothing actually going on next week. So I put this in instead because this is a Linux Fest that's near and dear to our heart. It's the Ohio Linux Fest. It's coming up in Columbus, Ohio from the 12th through the 13th of October. And the Ohio Linux Fest is a grassroots conference for the GNU Linux open source software, free software community that started in 2003, has a large interlug Linux user group. If you don't know that, meeting and has grown steadily since. It is a place for the community to gather and share information about Linux and open source software. Several registration levels will be available for attendees, including free, if I'm not mistaken. So, you know, always good to have a free conference. Please help support the nonprofit volunteer-run Ohio Linux Fest by donating or by registering for the Ohio Linux Fest Institute. Professional training will be held on October 12th. And of course, links to the Ohio Linux Fest in October. They could call it the October Linux Fest. I mean, it's in October, right? So
October Linux Fest.
There's an idea in the making there. They should actually kind of
beer and Linux.
Beer, yeah, absolutely. Well, it's already beer and Linux. They just don't call it Oktoberfest Linux.
Right. Yeah.
So, all right, cool. Ohio Linux Fest coming up in not next week, but the week after. So, because the only thing I could find for next week was PyCon India, and I'm not sure that our listener base would be interested in that particular conference.
But if they are, you can go look up PyCon India.
Yeah, just go Google PyCon India. So there you go. All right. So our Linux in the Ham Shack open source challenge for the next, dare I say it, fortnight is...
Not later.
Okay, well, good. I'm glad you're off the fortnight. Is to try and find a way to use an application on Linux that you've always or ordinarily used on Windows. So there you go. I'm going to try and find one that I use on Windows all the time and see if I can make it work on Linux by hook or by crook, whether VM or Wine or native or whatever it is. Just try and migrate something you do on Windows over to Linux. There's a challenge for you. That's a real challenge. So
yeah, you do that.
Okay, I'll try.
Okay.
All right, so
I just want you to know, there's at least 200 couples in the United Kingdom that have filed for divorce this year, citing Fortnite as the reason. So just take that as advice, marital advice. Don't play Fortnite.
And Dave in the chat room says, trigger!
trigger!
All right.
Is this Roy Rogers or what? Oh, should have dated myself.
Oh, that's funny, bullseye. Okay. Let's move.
Different movie.
Yeah, I know. It's a totally different
movie. Got a snake in my boot.
Different movie entirely. That's right.
I know what you're talking about.
Toy Story 2, one of my favorites of all time.
We love Toy Story. Yeah. So.
There's a snake in my boot.
All right, Woody.
It's funny. I watched the first Well, I watched the first several episodes of Last Man Standing. Cheryl watched the first one, the pilot. Right. And there is a reference in the pilot to Buzz Lightyear. It's funny. Oh, I just spilled my...
Do you have party foul. Any towels on here?
Yeah, and actually, it didn't matter because it was in a Glencairn glass, so it didn't actually spill. So... I got a little dribble out the top, so... That's nice. What he
so,
said. Hey,
so, speaking of Last Man yes. Standing... Did you guys ever send your QSL cards?
I've got to do that.
That was Russell's job, and he still has not done it.
And we've never mentioned that. Well, we kind of mentioned in the chat room, if you pay attention there. But, John Amadeo.
He's a producer of Last Man Standing.
Yes. And a listener.
Sent a request. Yeah, sent a request to us as a listener of the podcast to send in our QSL cards for the Wall of Shame. In Tim Allen's ham shack there. At the Last Man Standing set, and mine is there. I've already seen it in one picture with Ray Novak in it. So I know at least mine got there. I did send about 10 stickers as well. I haven't seen those appear anywhere. And my QSL card is like my call sign is very muted on the front, so it's kind of hard to pick mine out, but I can see the picture. Right? Yeah. So I know what picture is on. So the picture is like shot over the rims. And if you go to my QRZ page, you can see it there, and you can kind of put two and two together. But anyway,
there's still have several episodes to film, so I'm going to try and get ours out here like real soon.
Yeah, super get yours soon, out so. There.
Why don't you do that tomorrow?
Okay, I'll try and do that tomorrow.
Yeah, and support the show. Support the show. Yep. Make sure they get renewed. Whatever it takes, watch it on TiVo or whatever 5,000 different ways, so they get more and more views and. And I mean, this is it's a funny show. I don't care what your politics are and stuff like that.
Yeah,
I think
it was funny. So.
It is funny.
I love stuff that's just kind of just off the chart right. Either way. So,
well, yeah, Russ's description of the show to me after he watched the episodes he did was it is Home Improvement with a Bass Pro Shop swing to it, and I was like, well, that's kind of interesting since the home of Bass Pro Shops is here. And he's like, just wait until, you know, they like show the building and stuff. And I was like, oh, wow. Were they in Springfield, Missouri taking pictures of the building?
Well, of course, every Bass Pro looks more or less
kind
the same,
of like that. So, yeah. So,
but it's
except
it's
for
very,
the one in Memphis.
Well, that's true. But it's overtly Bass Pro. that they modeled the store after. They, of course, will never say that, but.
Yeah.
Or Cabela's.
Well, right,
Cabela's don't look like that.
Cabela's don't look like that, and Bass Pro only bought Cabela's last year. So, I mean, the original store was clearly modeled after Bass Pro. So, but anyway, enough about that. I'll get those in super soon, and hopefully in the next few episodes, we'll see it up there.
Yeah. Somebody will be shooting video there because they always allow, a certain amount of high profile visitors, I guess. Those privileged people. That privileged class of people that get to go there and check it out. I'm sure anybody could actually go there if you just request early enough and give them time and stuff like that. Obviously they get the club station comes on the air quite frequently, and they post it out on Facebook when they're online. So yeah, check it out. And if you happen to see QSL cards up there, look for ours. Ours might be up there.
All right. Very cool. Well, we know yours is. And as soon as I send mine to John, hopefully ours will be too. So,
yeah.
All right. So now we're going to jump into 2 weeks of hedonism. Yay. Woo-hoo! That's what we're all living for.
Well, yeah.
And we're going to start with food, as we always do. And Cheryl's going to tell us about the recipe she picked for this
week. All right. So when Russ first moved to Missouri, he was not a fan of macaroni and cheese in any way. My life goal at that point was to show him the beauty of homemade, not that box stuff, macaroni and cheeses. Luckily, he has willingly come to the dark side of mac and cheese lovers, and this is the next recipe that I want to try. And it is super creamy mac and cheese. It has a package of elbow macaroni, a package of shredded sharp cheddar, a 12-ounce container of small curd cottage cheese, 8 ounces of sour cream, a quarter cup of Parmesan, salt and pepper, breadcrumbs, and butter. So yeah,
butter. So, we all know what you use butter for, right?
Oh, butter.
No. At this point, I think I should just leave.
Well, you use it for putting on your English muffins. What'd you think I meant?
Okay, whatever.
Anybody ever see the movie Sling Blade?
Wow.
All right, you're doing a recipe, right?
Maybe. Okay. I don't know. It's kind of gone off the rails at this point.
So. Butter.
Okay. Ooh,
melted butter and breadcrumbs.
Yeah.
You get the slick and the friction all at once. Ugh. So good.
Bill, why don't you go get another beer?
I'm going to call your wife here in a second.
I don't think I could have another beer at this point. Going to be on the floor after this one.
So anyway, you boil your macaroni and mix it together with the cheese and the cottage cheese and the sour cream and everything, and bake it for about 30 or 35 minutes until it's golden brown.
All right. Well, I do like your mac and cheese. It's not Kraft Dinner for sure. That's the stuff that I never could deal with when I was younger, the stuff that comes out of the blue box. And I know it's almost like a rite of passage to eat, you know, Kraft macaroni and cheese.
But I do like Kraft macaroni and cheese.
Yeah, I just can never do it. I could every little piece of elbow macaroni looked like an eye looking at me. So
Kraft macaroni and cheese doesn't have elbow macaroni. Right.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, no, it's
elbows.
It's elbows. Elbows.
Yeah.
I thought they were straight pieces.
No. I think they sort of become straight when you cook them because it's crap mac and cheese, but
it's crap.
What? K-R-A-P, crap mac and cheese.
Well, I find if you make it with a half and half and a decent butter, it actually turns out quite nicely.
But, you know, with my macaroni and cheese.
But my wife still, my wife still throws ketchup on it. So.
People do that, and I'm just like, ugh.
Well, of course, you put ketchup on eggs, so you have no room to talk.
Lots of people put ketchup on eggs.
Yeah, no one should put ketchup on eggs. Also,
just scrambled eggs.
No.
You
should not put ketchup on eggs, nor should you put ketchup on hot dogs. It's a sacrilege to put ketchup on a hot dog. Sorry. For all those people who put ketchup on hot dogs,
I put ketchup on my hot dogs.
You're all just wrong. Okay. No.
Ketchup, relish, and mustard go on hot dogs.
Okay. We'll agree to disagree.
Whatever.
I'll give you mustard and relish.
Russ only does mustard and onion. He must have onion.
Some kind of onion, either onion flakes, onion powder, whatever. It has to be onion. So,
yeah, I think it's a palate change. At some point, you know, as a kid, you probably put ketchup on everything.
Of course, I like everything.
Ketchup is on hot dogs and stuff like that. And like, I cannot take ketchup on a hot dog anymore. I'll put a burger and stuff like that, but not a hot dog. It just doesn't taste right to me. Maybe it's too sweet because I put a bunch of relish on it.
I can't do mustard on a burger.
Oh, I see. I like mustard. You know, depending on the day, it's either mustard and ketchup or mayo and ketchup. It just depends on the day.
Mine's mayo and ketchup, and you know that. So
true.
You get the Thousand Islands
good too.
That too, so.
Get the Frisco melt.
Well, that's what.
Or a Big Mac.
That's all the mayo and ketchup is.
Yeah, basically. Well, there's a little relish in it too.
Yeah.
All right. So moving on, we'll hit my drink corner. And what I have here is a bottle of Dark Horse, which is actually now called Union Horse, but this bottle is a few years old, so it's still the Dark Horse variety. Reunion Rye Whiskey in barrel strength. And back when I first tried this, I think this might have been at the first or the second Whiskey Fest we went to. It was the second one.
Or third.
This turned into my favorite rye whiskey, and it's still very near the top of my list. And I'm not even sure. They show on the Union Horse website that they still make it, but I couldn't find anywhere on the web that actually sells it. So apparently it's still out there somewhere, but
I bet you can find it in Kansas City somewhere.
You probably can. So anyway, their description of it is handcrafted from a 100% rye mash bill and distilled in a copper pot still. It's barreled at a proof of 110. Mine's actually a little stronger than that. And aged in new Missouri oak. Each barrel is carefully selected by artisan distillers, then blended to taste. Uncut and unfiltered, it's whiskey in its purest form, reserved for the best of times. So as I said, my bottle, I don't think my bottle has a date on it. It might somewhere, but I can't see it. But it's at least 4 years old. And mine is 114.33 proof, which is 57.17% alcohol. It's made in Kansas City, Missouri, which is where Union Horse Distillery is. The color on it is a nice, deep, burnt caramel color. It's a real, real dark color. It's probably caramel colored, which is why it has that dark color. They do say it's non-chill filtered, though. And I don't know how that affects bourbon. That's more of a thing you hear about Scotch whiskey than you do about bourbon. And this isn't even bourbon. It's a rye whiskey. So I don't know why the hell I'm talking about bourbon. but I've got my tasting notes here. And I'm going to go ahead and sniff it. And on the nose, it's not super complex, but it has a really pleasant nose to it. It's got vanilla at the forefront and caramel. And you do get a little bit of the smokiness from the oak barrels, of course. You get a little bit of lemon, and you get peppermint, which is kind of nice. Peppermint sort of on the back end, which is kind of its defining character. And when you taste it, you get citrus up front, whether it be lemon or some other citrusy flavor, vanilla, toffee, mint, wintergreen, and then sort of after all of those sort of hit you in the head, those are the primary. Then as it washes down the back of your palate into the back of your throat, you also get a little bit of pepper, like black pepper, a little leather, and a little smoke. It's almost like a peat smoke, but it's probably just the oak char. So it's actually very interesting, and it's not nearly as sort of bright and abrasive as a lot of rye whiskeys tend to be. A lot of them have that very sort of dry, harsh, peppery rye character. And considering this is made from 100% rye, it's very interesting that it doesn't have that flavor profile. Whatever the aging process does to this particular mash bill takes a lot of the edge off the rye, which is probably the reason why I like it so much. Also, the fact that it's also 60% alcohol. So, yeah, this is a good bargain. I think this bottle cost around $65. I don't know what it costs now because I can't find anywhere that sells it. But if you can find it, it's about $65. And on my 100-point rating scale, I'm going to give it a 90 out of 100.
Currently, it retails for $68.99.
Okay.
This bottle is from 2014, and they are based out of Lenexa, Kansas.
Okay, that's probably about the same age as the bottle I have here.
Yeah, that was the first year they did it. It was 2014, and that has on the label, it has Legacy on it, Legacy number one.
Okay.
Which meant that it was the first year.
Ooh, I probably should hold on to some of this then.
Yeah.
I have about half the bottle left.
The bottle is also numbered.
Yeah, I see it's 866 of 941. Yeah, 866 of 941. So
yeah.
I probably need to hold on to what's left of this.
Yeah. And the Reunion Rye won several medals for it. So, But Dark Horse Distillery is...
it's now Union Horse.
Right, is in Lenexa, Kansas. So. All right.
So if you can find some of the newer versions of this, you should definitely get some. I don't know how it compares to this particular bottle that I have. Obviously, these older bottlings are going to be sort of unique, but if you like rye whiskey, you should definitely check this out. So that's all I'm going to talk about that. So Bill's going to tell us what he's been getting drunk on.
Jeez. I'm not drunk. What are you talking about? Jeez. Well, I was going to actually review Budweiser's new the Copper. What is that stuff called? The Budweiser Reserve Copper Lager. Which I went to Walmart and I was looking for beer, and you know, all their craft beers are too expensive there. At least cuz I know I can go to like the town pump gas station and buy it cheaper. So I was like, "Oh, there's these new Budweisers with the bourbon barrel, you know, whatever, aged on the bourbon Jim Beam barrel, bourbon barrel." And I got a 12-pack of that, but I finished it already. And I have to say it tasted like Budweiser. I wasn't terribly impressed. I was really expecting kind of a boozy flavor, but not really. So if you haven't tried it, it's, you know, if you like Budweiser, you'll like that. It's fine. But what I'm drinking tonight is from Big Sky Brewing Company. It's a Shake a Day India Pale Ale. Of course, it's an IPA. And, you know, that's all I ever drink. except for the Copper Lager. I did have that. So this is a 7.5% ABV. So, you know, a little peppy, potent peppy, for a brew, IPA. Yep. 65 IBU, so not too high on the bitterness scale. You know, I've had worse. It's of course out of Montana here. You can probably find it in the northwest. It's the color is gold or blue if you don't have X-ray vision or glass, because the can is blue. So it's quite pretty. The can actually has like a shake a day is actually a shows a set of dice and a cup, a shaker cup with a what appears to be a buffalo's skull on it. And the notes are from the website. In Montana, we have a pastime bar game called Shake a Day. Each day at your favorite watering hole, you'll get one opportunity to throw 50 cents into a pot with hopes of rolling five of a kind and winning a pocket full of cash. This favorable risk is risk to reward is our inspiration for brewing this aggressive American style IPA. Brewed with Pacific Northwest and Australian hop varieties. Good day, mate. Bright aromas and resinous. Resinous? Yeah, I guess so. Resinous. Yeah, resinous pine dominate the palate, and the clean, well attenuated finish has enough body to leave you wanting another roll of the dice. And I did have to go in for seconds, so I have to agree with that. You know, I didn't really like, it's like sniffing it. Just to see if there was anything worth smelling. It didn't really taste as hoppy as I like. You know, I really like the kind of overwhelming bouquet of the hop kind of just showing itself, which of course would probably attribute to more IBUs. But I didn't really notice it in it. It kind of, you know, it was kind of like a diminished smell. And I didn't really get any pine or anything else like that out of at least the smell. At least not what I would consider pine, but I'm a Florida guy originally, so Florida pine probably smells different than the pine up here, and I frankly can't smell it up here. So, yeah, it's not as hoppy as I liked. The price here runs anywhere from like $8 to $11 for a 6-pack of cans, depending whether it's on sale, like most craft brews. And out of 10, I'd probably give this a 7.5. It's a good beer. You know, the second one is tasting better and better every sip. So I can't really complain about that, but it probably, I don't know if I would go and order it off a menu. I mean, if it was the only one they had on tap, okay, I would order it. But there are better IPAs, but this one is good. I mean, it does taste good, but I like a lot of different ones. So yeah, if you can get your hands on that one, check it out. If not, you know, there's a million other IPAs out here in Montucky.
Fantastic. I think we've let the Weekender run its course.
Yes.
Yep. Got lots of information out there. We give you lots of things to try, a few things to experiment with, and some hedonism to indulge in. I don't think we could do more than that for the next couple of weeks. So with that, we're going to get on out of here. Stay tuned for next Monday's deep dive episode, which will be episode number 250. We're all looking forward to that one. And we'll catch you then. But for now, this has been episode number 249 of Linux in the Ham Shack. I'm Russ, K5TUX.
I'm Cheryl, W5MOO.
And I'm Bill, NE4RD73.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Linux in the Ham Shack. LHS is a community-sponsored podcast. Our website is located at lhspodcast.info. You can support the program by visiting the LHS Patreon page of patreon.com/LHS podcast or using the contribute link on the website. Get in touch via social media. The show has a presence on Google+, Facebook, Twitter, Discord, and YouTube. Or you can drop an email to info@lhspodcast.info or record a voicemail at 1-909-LHS-SHOW. That's 1-909-547-7469. Visit the IRC channel, LHS Podcast, on the Freenode IRC network. Also visit the online merchandise store at shop.lhspodcast.info for fun and fashionable LHS merchandise. Become an ambassador and represent LHS at a Linux convention or hamfest. Email ambassadors@lhspodcast.info or visit the website for details. The podcast is recorded live every Monday night at 8 o'clock p.m. Central Time. Connect to the stream at stream.blacksparrowmedia.net:8008-LHS-Live. Until next time, over and out. Linux in the Ham Shack and the Linux in the Ham Shack logo are released under a Creative Commons Attribute Non-Commercial No Derivatives 4.0 International License.
Do you have any of them French fried potatoes? I like them French fried potatoes.